who fish in Canada for sport, at least in Ontario for sport, there's a law that when they catch it, they have to throw it back in the water. Okay. And the only ones that they keep is the ones that they plan to eat.
So that's very, thank you for sharing it, because it's very interesting. We'll try to see if that applies somehow to hunting as well. All right, try to see if that applies to hunting as well. So let's just say hello to those who's here. Nathan, hello. And I see Sheila is here, and Jack, good to see you, my friend. Okay, wonderful that all of you are here today. Some cannot participate in today's class. I actually received a couple of emails from a couple of you, none of them, they're not here, who said it is a little bit of a sensitive topic for them to discuss, and they prefer not to, when I very much respect that and very much appreciate it. Even though you will see that, again, the Torah has a very substantive approach towards this thing. And you would not be surprised that even before we even finish our class, I should say, the bottom line is, it is totally, totally forbidden. All right? That's the bottom line I can say at the beginning of the class, because the real question is, not whether hunting is forbidden or not, but why would hunting be forbidden? If slaughter is fine, it's not forbidden, we can eat animals, why would hunting be forbidden? And that's what I want to explore today. And I want to focus mostly on Tsar Balei Chaim. All right, that's the topic I want to focus on today. I'll send again the source sheet in the chat box. You can all get it. You can all have it. Also send it to your emails. And let's roll. Let's roll. So first of all, when we explore the question of hunting in Halacha, we should go all the way back to Tanakh, to the Bible, try to see who we know were hunters in the Tanakh. Who do you think? Who can you remember was a hunter? A very famous hunter in Tanakh.
Esav.
Exactly. We know about Esav, who was a hunter. We'll see it in a minute in the sources inside. Who's the second one? Actually, before Esav, who was a hunter? We're told who was a hunter.
Nimrod.
Exactly, Nimrod. Who was Nimrod? So take a look in source number one. In Bereshit 10, the right at the beginning of the Torah, we're talking about after Noah's Ark, after the flood, all right, when we talk about Migdal Bavel, all right, and we talk about the tower. So we're told that Cush, right, a man named Cush, he produced a son. He was the son, that his name was Nimrod. Nimrod began to be powerful on earth. He was a mighty hunter before Hashem. That's what we are told. He was a mighty hunter. He's the first person we know in the Tanakh that was called a hunter. It is therefore said, like Nimrod, a mighty hunter before Hashem. In Hebrew, it's called Gibor Tzaid. All right, this is the first time we see the word Tzaid. Tzaid means hunting in Hebrew. And Nimrod was the first one to be a hunter. Now, Nimrod was the leader of the attempt to build the tower to reach God and fight God. He wasn't a positive character at all in Tanakh. He was a very negative character. Interesting to see that we were told he was a hunter. Not only that, also we said that Esav was a hunter. And Esav was not a positive character as well. I brought in source number two. We're told that when Esav and Yaakov grow up, then we're told that the lads, Esav and Yaakov, grew up. Esav became a skilled hunter. The Torah tells us he became a skilled hunter, a man of the field. Yaakov was a wholesome man living in tents. Yitzchak favored Esav because he was a hunter, but Rivka favored Yaakov. And if you remember, I gave shiur actually at the beginning of last year. It's been a while. It's been more than a year and a half since we gave it. If you remember, a series called On Parents and Children in the Book of Bereshit. We went through different stories of families of Bereshit from Adam and Chava all the way to Yosef, and trying to trace there and learn some meanings and some lekachim messages from those stories. And we also learned about Yaakov and Esav and the idea that Esav was a hunter. Yaakov was a Talmid Chacham, according to Farshanim, liked to learn Torah and so on. And the fact that the Torah tells us that Kitzayid Befiv, in source number two, he was a hunter. He was hunting with his mouth. So Rashi says, what does it mean to hunt with the mouth? That he used to fool his father that almost he was a Talmid Chacham, like he was a pious, righteous, tzaddik person, even though he was not. So hunting with the mouth, not necessarily only hunting outdoors, also trying to mislead someone with your word. And that was Esav. So again, Esav wasn't a positive character. He was a negative character. And him, with Nimrod together, being hunters, we should assume at first glance, before even jumping into any kind of sources from the rabbis, that hunting is not such a positive act based on the character that we know were hunters in the Torah itself. Nimrod and Esav. Also, what we're told in source number 3, we know when Esav sells his birthright to Yaakov, he tells us in source number 3, Esav says to himself, here I am going to die, what good it is this birthright to me? Why do I need this birthright? Why do I need all of this? Because I'm about to die. Rashi explained, what is about to die? In source number 4, Ibn Ezra tells us, I am going to die. He means that every day Esav went hunting. He risked himself of being killed by an animal. So because Esav was a hunter, he said that, you know, I might go hunting tomorrow and not come back home alive. Maybe it is better for me to sell my birthright and to give it to Yaakov. So we know that Esav and Nimrod were both hunters. But does that really mean that the Torah is against hunting? Could we say that only because the characters that are hunters in Tanakh are negative hunters, should we say that hunting is totally, totally forbidden according to Halacha? Not necessarily. In order to do that, to prove that hunting is wrong, we need to go and understand a very important commandment. It's not only a value, it's not only ethical, it's not only moral, it is Halacha, it is a commitment, a commandment. And this obligation is called Tzar Ba'alei Chaim, or in English, to not cause or harm or cause distress to any animal, any creature. That's actually a prohibition from the Torah. There arises a biblical prohibition to cause distress or to harm any animal. Very interesting. And I want to give a couple of examples of this exactly prohibition. It's a prohibition not to cause any kind of distress, but the Torah mentions, gives us different examples of what exactly that means. Anyone wants to share any kind of example you can think from our Torah, from our world, about any kind of thing regarding Tzar Balei Chaim? Where does that come to expression? In what do we do that comes to expression? Anyone knows? Anyone has any clue? Linda?
Shiluach HaKen.
In Shiluach HaKen, we'll see it, definitely. Sending of the bird, we'll talk about it in a minute. What else?
When you're not supposed to put like heavy things on a donkey or something.
Exactly, we'll see that as well. Let's start actually with that, Sheila. Let's start with this. So I brought in source number 5. The Torah tells us in Shemot, if you see a donkey of your enemy lying under its burden, and you might not want to help him, right, because he's your enemy, you don't want to help him, but you should make every effort to help him. In Hebrew it says, Azov Tazov Imo. Most of the rabbis learned from this very source that there is a biblical commandment to help the donkey to raise up again. To lift the donkey up, because even though the donkey might belong to your enemy, a person you don't like, and he collapsed because of the burden, it is a positive commandment to go and help him, and it is a negative commandment not to do so. All right, so one example is this. If we see an animal in distress, we have the obligation to go and help it. All right, that's one. Another example can be another halacha called Lo Tachsom Shor Bedisho. What is Lo Tachsom Shor Bedisho? I brought it in source number 6. Take a look. Lo Tachsom Shor Bedisho is a pasuk from Devarim, Devarim 25. Rashi explains, you shall not muzzle an ox while it is threshing. That's the verse. Rashi says, the same law applies to any cattle, non-domesticated beast, and fowl that are doing some work that is connected with food. We have a prohibition that says you are not allowed to block an animal that works with food. For example, carries food, or plees the field, or has anything to do with food. You're not allowed to block the animal from actually consuming the food she's working on. That's a biblical prohibition. Now, for most of us, we don't really see it today in our lives because we don't really we don't work in agricultural society. But it was a huge thing, because if you used to have, today we have, we have those huge vehicles that can help us. But back then, when you used your ox or a cow or a donkey to plow your field, then the ox could just eat from the produce and there would be no problem with it. You're not allowed to block it from doing so. All right, so that's another example. So we saw one example is you have to lift an animal that, I know, was too heavy for it and it just broke down and fell, even though it belongs to your enemy. Another example of Tzar Bali Chaim is this, not preventing from an animal to eat from the produce it is working on. And then give another example, in verse number 7, as we said, Shilua Haken, just as Linda said, we have a mitzvah. If someone wants to have eggs from the bird, he has to release the bird, the mommy bird, first, and only then he can get the eggs. And I brought in verse number 7. They're a very interesting mitzvah for itself. I can give an entire shiur about this mitzvah. In verse number 7, the Torah tells us, if along the road you chance upon a bird's nest in any tree or on the ground with fledglings or eggs and the mother sitting over the fledglings or the eggs, do not take the mother together with her young. Let the mother go and take only the young in order that you may fare well and have a long life. That's a biblical mitzvah that we call Shiluach HaKen. Now, very interesting. Has any of you ever had the opportunity to perform this mitzvah? So, Baruch Hashem, I had more than once. And it's actually a very popular thing in Israel that happens a lot. How come? In Israel, maybe you know it, so most people live in apartments, right? In apartment buildings, not like in Toronto. And each apartment usually has an external boiler for hot water. That's how it works. Usually it's a unit that every apartment has. It's not like a shared boiler or something for the building. And usually it is attached to your balcony. And time after time after time, doves and birds love nesting on this boiler. It is warm, it is safe, it is in your balcony, it is really, everyone almost at least once in their lifetime, if not more, experienced nesting of birds on your boiler attached to your apartment. Same thing in my parents' apartment in Israel. It happens a lot. What many people do is they install nets, right? There's a special net. You can install it on the external side of the building, and that prevents birds from flying into this, balcony and nesting there. But still, if you don't have the net, or if the net is torn or something, then yes, definitely you have birds nesting there. And the question that rises is, then what should you do? Because you don't want the bird to nest on your boiler. It's not good for the boiler also, and it's not good for the house and so on. What do you do? Now, there's a question. Can I just get rid of the eggs? Sometimes, a lot of times, you find eggs in those nests. And how do you get rid of the eggs? Some rabbis said, you only need to let the bird fly and then get rid of the eggs. You only need to have the mitzvah if you want to eat, to consume the eggs. But we don't want to eat those eggs most of the times. There is nothing to do here. The question is what you should do. And definitely, there are some rabbis who say you should let the bird fly, the mother go, and only then you can clean up your boiler from the nest with the eggs. You're not allowed to do it while the mother is watching. So it is actually a practical thing in Israel that happens. Different rabbis discuss either a bracha that you say on it. Is there no bracha that you say beforehand and so on, right? Is there a bracha? Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Asher Kideshanu Mitzvotav V'Tzivanu Al Shiluach HaKen, and then you do it or not? Very interesting. I'll just say, you see, you can give a shiur only about that. Very interesting. There's only two commandments and the Torah, that the reward on them is to live long life. Two commandments. One, Shiluach HaKen, this one. The Torah says, right? It's not a reward.
Respect your parents.
Right? And respect your parents. Exactly, Claudia. Do you see the connection between the two? Right? Do you see the connection between letting the mommy bird fly and only then taking the eggs and having respect in kibud avayim and respecting your parents, right? And we're not the only one who see the connection. The Rambam himself, in source number 9, saw this connection. The Rambam says, it is also prohibited, and that's another example of causing distress to an animal. I brought in source number 8. I'm sorry that I skipped it. In source number 8, I brought another example of Tzar Bali Chaim. We have another prohibition called Oto Ve'et Beno. It is a prohibition that Torah tells in source number 8. However, he says, no animal from the herd or from the flock shall be slaughtered on the same day with its young. All right, we have a prohibition regarding shechita, slaughtering, a person is not allowed to slaughter the father and the son or the mother and the son at the same day. You can slaughter it day in concert, maybe day after day, but not on the same day. And the Rambam explains this, and Shiluach HaKen explains this fall in verse number 9. It is also prohibited to kill an animal with its young on the same day, in order that people should be restrained and prevented from killing the two together, in such a manner that the young is slain in the sight of the mother, for the pain of the animals under such circumstances is very great. He says, there is no difference. And take a look, Rambam, talking about 800 years ago. Not a, you know, progressive rabbi today, a vegetarian. Take a look. He says, there is no difference in this case between the pain of man and the pain of other living beings, he says. Since the love and tenderness of the mother for her young one is not produced by reasoning, but by imagination. And this faculty exists not only in man, but in most living beings, says the Rambam. Rambam says there is no difference between the love of mother to her son or the love of mommy bird to her little baby, her little baby. The care that a mother has towards her son is the same for all creatures, says the Rambam. There is just no difference. And that is the reason we're not allowed to take the eggs when the mother is watching, or to slaughter the mother and the son at the same day, so the mother or the father will not suffer, even though they're not human beings or animals, yet we don't want them to suffer from such a thing. As the Rambam tells us, this sense, this feelings of caring, of loving, of making sure that everything will be fine with the kid, is something that human beings and animals have in common. Which is a very interesting thing to think about. Yeah, Claudette.
Have any of the rabbis or sages write on the point that this mitzvah of not killing the young with the parent is not only for this animal's feeling, but the human being become desensitized if they do this action?
You're right. There are some of the explanations, and we talked a little bit about it that last week when we talked about the giraffe, is that we have an obligation to make sure that we don't extinct any kind of species that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has created in the world. Same thing we talked about giraffe, either giraffe kosher or not, and giraffe is an endangered species and so on. Yes, some rabbis explain Otov et Beno exactly. The fact that you're not allowed to slaughter the parent and the child together is the fact that you need to make sure there is continuation to any kind of species that God created in this world. Definitely there is. Definitely the rabbis interpret and understand it that way. Yes, Linda.
Does that extend also? Is that sort of the premise for not eating meat and milk together?
So this is different. This is different. That prohibition itself is phrased in a very ethical, moral phrase. Why? Because the prohibition is lo tevashel gedi bechalev imo. You should not cook, right, eat or enjoy the calf with its mother's milk, right, so on. So definitely the prohibition itself is painted, or I said colored, in moral, ethical colors. But we don't hold that this is actually coming from Tzar Balei Chaim, the prohibition. That's why I didn't bring it as an example, but that's a good point, that the prohibition itself is steaming, looks like from Tzar Balei Chaim, as the commandment is phrased in such a way, even though we don't hold that. Yes, Nathan.
Unless I misunderstood, I thought what Claudette was, the point she was trying to bring out, is what I was thinking about, is that our Chachamim tell us that by performing this mitzvah, we are building our character to be Rachmanis, to be people who care about things. And that's a way of building our character to sympathize.
That we have an obligation to be compassionate to any kind of creature in the world. You're all right. We say, V'racham avakol ma'asav, and we'll see it in a moment, from a pasuk from Psalms, from Tehillim, that we are actually obligated for such a thing. So definitely. We'll see it in a moment. All right, we'll see it in a moment. Any more questions? We'll see another example. Another example for Tsar Baalei Chaim, another prohibition we have within our Jewish law for not causing distress for any kind of human beings. I actually brought it in source number 11. So skip for a moment from source number 11. The Gemara, Talmud Brachos, tells us that Rav Yehuda said, that Rav said, source number 11, one is prohibited from eating before feeding his animals. There is a prohibition. If you got any kind of pets, I see that Barbara has here birds, for example, then before she needs to eat, she has to make sure that her pets, their animals, have their food ready. It's a mitzvah. It's halacha. All right, it's not just a recommendation. It's very, very important to understand this. All right, for example, if you got fish, people sometimes don't think about it. Fish as pets. Fish as well. Applies to fish. If you got a tank with fish, you need to make sure you feed the fish before you eat yourself. All right? Why is this, is, as it stated, he says in Deuteronomy, we say it in Kriyas Shema, and I will give grass in your fields for your animals first, and only then, the verse states, and you shall eat and be satisfied. So God himself, first of all, says that he will give the food for the animals, and only then we will eat and be satisfied. And that is one, it's not only a good manner. Yes, it's not only to be, with good deeds or good manners. It is very important, and it is actually a mitzvah and halacha to do so. So we saw, so far, five examples of Tsar Baalei Chaim, causing distress. Let's just go through it, and then Jack will have a question. Number one, we saw there is a prohibition, there is a mitzvah. You must help any kind of animal in distress. If it has a lot of burden, a lot of heavy weight on it, you have to help it even though it might be belong to your enemy. That's one. Number two, we saw, for example, shiluach haken. You have to let the mommy bird go before you take the little birds or the eggs. Three, we saw lo tachsom shol b'dicho. If there is an animal that works in an environment that contains food, you have to let the animal eat from that food. You're not allowed to block it and prevent it from eating it. Four, we saw the example that you're not allowed to slaughter the father and the son at the same day, not to cause distress to the parent. And five, last we saw that a person has to provide food to the other animals that he owns, and only then to make sure he also eats. But first of all, for the other animals. So those are five examples. There's more. There's other examples. I brought only five of how Tsar Baalei Chaim, the prohibition of causing distress or harming other animals, applies in our daily Jewish life. Yes, Jack. You're muted.
I was just going to make the comment that you see that in the story of the servant of Avraham when he comes to it. When first of all, he wants
first of all, go and water, right? My cattle, yeah. my camels, yeah. And only then water me. Exactly. So when Jack says correctly that when Avraham is sending Eliezer, his servant, to look for a wife for Yitzchak, then he tells him that the woman, the girl that you will see that will water the camels before she waters you, then you know that she will be the wife for my son. So that's the sign that Eliezer is being given by Avraham to look for the wife. Definitely. Thank you. That's a very important thing. Thank you very much for sharing this. So we see we have this idea of not causing harm for animals. Now, would that apply for hunting? It's a very interesting question. Would that apply for hunting? Hold your horses for a moment. We'll try to see if that's correct. But even the rabbis understood that we must be and try to live in compassion with other animals, with other creatures. I brought a story in source number 10. The Gemara tells a story in Talmud Tractate Masechet Baba Metzia 85a, says as follows. The Gemara stated that Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, who was Rabbi Yehuda the prince, was a leading rabbi, a leading spiritual rabbi, was in the time after the Second Temple. Rabbi Yehuda's suffering came upon him due to an incident. He was suffering from something. He was ill. He was ill. Why? Because due to an incident, what happened? What was the incident that led to his suffering? That's the Gemara. The Gemara answers that there was a certain calf that was being led to slaughter. The calf went and hung its head on the corner of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi's garment and was weeping, says the Gemara. Didn't want to go to slaughter. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi said to it, go, as you were created for this purpose. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi did not act in any kind of compassion with the little calf. The little calf wanted to hold on to Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi and not being slaughtered. And he wept and cried. But Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi said, I don't care about you. You should go be slaughtered. That's the reason you were created for. To become food for people to eat. And it is said in heaven, since he, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, was not compassionate towards the calf, let afflictions come upon him. And what happened? The Gemara explains the statement and left him due to another incident. One day the Gemara says, the maidservant of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi was sweeping his house. There were young weasels lying around, ants, bugs, whatever, lying around on the floor. And she was in the process of sweeping them out. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi said to her, let them be. Don't whip them out. Let them be. He learned his lesson, and it is written in Psalms 145, the Lord is good to all, and his mercies are over all his works. They said in heaven, since he was compassionate, we shall be compassionate on him, and he was relieved of his suffering. A beautiful, beautiful story from the Talmud that we're told about this rabbi. Again, he very important role. He was the editor of the Mishnah. And he, we're told, was not compassionate for this little calf. And he suffered because of this. So he learned the lesson and he told his maidservant, don't whip the floor while you kill the bugs. Rather, let them just be or let them go. And from this we learn, and there's many people that do it, they do not kill insects. Yes, there's a lot of Jews that do not kill bugs. They will say, V'rachama v'kol masav, you should be compassionate to any creature. They will catch them or something, or they will release them outside, outdoors. They will not kill them. Now, obviously, sometimes a person can be very, very scared, afraid. Maybe there can be harmful, like, for example, mosquitoes. So we'll see what happens when you need to cause distress to animals, because we are permitted to cause distress and harm animals when we need to. So we'll see whether that applies to hunting or not, but it is very interesting to see that. More than that, I brought, if we already learned the pasuk from Tehillim of Beracham of Akol Masav, I brought the pasuk in source number 12. We say it 3 times a day, actually. We say God is good to all, and his mercies are upon all his creations. So the Radak says as followed on this pasuk in his commentary on Tehillim. He says, he explains, what does it mean that God is good to all? He says that God is good even towards different species of animals. That's number 13. Even towards different species of animals, livestock and birds, he is good and compassionate. And it is likewise fitting for a person, and Nathan, that's what he said, it is likewise fitting for a person to walk in God's ways and not to destroy life, says the Radak. We learn from God that God is compassionate to all creatures. We are obligated to follow God's steps, and we are also obligated to be compassionate to all living creatures. It is a mitzvah. It is a moral obligation. It is part, an inherited part of our Torah to be compassionate to all creatures, to all human beings. So Nathan, if that's what you refer to, you see the Radak learns it exactly from here. Verachamav al kol masav, that God is compassionate and good to everyone. Now, there is a question that the Radak himself asked. So let's say we do not cause any distress to animals, but we do see in nature, and I don't know if any of you like watching National Geographic or something like that, that sometimes animals, other animals, cause distress to other animals. And my question to you would be, if you see a cat chasing after a mouse or a rat, for example, like Tom and Jerry, do we have any commitment, any obligation to stop the cat from chasing the mouse? Or should we just let nature be as it is? What do you think? Based on this, if God is compassionate to all creatures, should we help other creatures when they are being chased by other animals? Or shouldn't we? I'm interested to hear what your thoughts are. I'm throwing it to the audience.
I think that the animals that eat other animals, it's natural. It's what it's called balancing the universe. You know,
and okay, so things are there because they're supposed to be like that.
Yeah,
that's what you say. So we're not supposed to. So the bottom line is that we should not stop. If you see a lion chasing an antelope, should we go and stop the lion?
No,
because we should be compassionate. We should be compassionate to all creatures. What happened to this?
It's nature.
What do we mean when we say it's nature?
You know why I wouldn't stop the lion? Because the lion is not like a human being that killed for no reason. The lion kill, eat that antelope, and will not kill another antelope until it's hungry or something like that. So it's all balanced.
It's all balanced.
We human beings, we have lost sight of balance. We are just destroying. But the nature of an animal is only when they need it.
I hear. We'll see that in a minute. We'll try to refer to that as well. Thank you, Claudette. Jack?
I really like her. Again, the film, in which it shows children, mice being pursued by cats, and tells them if they try to rescue the mice, they are weak. Because life is about the strong defeating the weak. And so I like what Claudette said very much, because first of all, there's a difference between the animal world and our world. And we should learn how to be merciful in our dealings with the animal world. But the animals have no obligation to be merciful to each other. If they were, then there would be too many of them and they'd wipe each other out. And as Claudette said, they don't come out and kill each other just because they want to kill each other. They do it as part of being predatory and surviving.
Okay, interesting. So take a look on the Rodak's answer. Rodak actually refers to this question, and he has a different answer from a different perspective. And it says as follows. There's another verse in the same psalm, in the same Tehillim. We say it in Tehillah David. We say it in the Davening. So in verse number 14, Tzadik Hashem bechol derachav, vechasid bechol ma'asav. That righteous is God in all his ways, and saintly in all of his acts. And the Radak says on this verse, in verse number 15, what is the fact that God is righteous in all his ways? He says that for in righteousness and fairness, God provides sustenance to every creature. And even though some animals consume other animals, just as a cat preys on mice, it is all just from God. For even to the animals and birds that are consumed, God also provides their sustenance while they are alive, he says. However, when their appointed time for death arrives, it is decreed in advance that their death will come through the direction of other living creatures. The Radak says that when we see, and that's the difference, that when we see an animal killing other animal, it is because God has chosen that this animal will end its life that way. Unlike when human beings kill other animals, which is just because we decided to do so. In other words, it's a little bit different than what Claudette and Jack said. I think it's both right. Both right. It doesn't say that it's balancing nature, but it says that like when an animal decides to kill other animal, it's because God has decided to. Unlike when human beings decide to slaughter or to kill other animals, it's because we decided to. And God is compassionate also to the rat that is being pursued by the cat, because when this rat, as long as it was alive, God is the one that sustained him and the one that gave him the food that he needs. And now God provides the cat with the food that it needs. And that's how God controls the world. I think it's a very profound answer by the Radak on the differences between human beings and other animals and other creatures. So when we get to the idea of Tzar Balei Chaim, we got an entire perspective from Torah, from rabbis, from stories, from the Tanakh, from interpretation that we as Jews and as human beings have the obligation to make sure that we do not cause distress to other animals. And it actually was passed into halacha. It is the halacha. And I brought in source number 16 in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch that he says in source number 16, it is forbidden according to the Torah to cause distress to any living creatures. On the contrary, he says, one is obligated to rescue any living being from distress, even if it belongs to no one, or even if it belongs to a non-Jew. The world refrains from harming animals since it is considered cruelty. Says Kitur Shulchan Aruch, and that is halacha lemaisa. We're not allowed to cause harm to any kind of animal. But we said, if you remember, that this is true and this is right. But what about when we need to? What about when there is a mosquito that is biting everyone in the room? What about food, slaughter for food? And what about hunting? If a person wants for his hobby to go and hunt, can he do that? If a person wants to go fish, can he go fishing? If that's something we can do for our hobby, that's considered to be a benefit that we can actually allow causing distress for. But before that, I brought the law from Israel, actually. It's very interesting. I don't know. I haven't checked. Maybe the Canadian law has the same ruling. But the Israeli law, the Israeli Knesset enacted in 1994 a law. It's called the Law of Tsar Baalei Chaim. The Law of Causing Distress to Animals was enacted in 1994. It's not 44, it's 94. And in Hebrew Tos number 17, a line from this law. The law says one is not allowed to torture any animal and not to act in cruelty against it in any way. And it can be put in prison if he does so in Israel. I don't know what the rule is like in Canada. It probably may be the same. But in Israel, the Knesset enacted 30 years ago that a person is not allowed to cause any kind of distress to any animal based on what the Torah has told us and based on all the prohibitions we saw in this first half of the class. So what about...
Same in Canada.
That's what I assume. So what about when we need it? What happens when we need it? I'll give you... Can you think about examples when do we need to cause distress to animals? What examples can we have when we need to cause distress to animals? Number one, the most basic one is food. Some would say, so maybe we should only be vegetarians. And then we're not going to cause any harm for animals. Maybe there is a law. Why wouldn't the Torah tell us, so you all have to be vegetarian? Part of kashrut would be, don't eat animals. But we know the Torah doesn't say that. We know we're allowed to eat animals. So does food considered to be something, a need, a necessity that is fine and good enough, strong enough to let us cause distress and kill animals? That's one. Number two can be health. What about experiences? Making an experiment on animals. Can you make any experiment on animal in order to make sure that drugs are good? For example, we know that they do it today. For example, checking before Moderna or Pfizer were able to release their vaccination of COVID, they had to test it on mice. Are we allowed to test vaccinations, for example, that we know will help the human beings? Can we test it on animals? Is that considered to be something that is worthwhile causing distress for animals, even though they might die from it? For example, what about hobby? So for some people, go fishing is good for their mental health. They go out, they sit on a boat, in the river, or in the lake, they calm down, it's good for their health. Maybe we say, okay, that's fine, you can go fishing for that. And what about hunting? When people go hunt, they usually go to hunt or to find food, or for their hobby. Is it fine to go hunting for hobby? Is hobby considered something that is useful, beneficial enough to say that it is actually not forbidden from the Torah to cause any kind of distress? So take a look. I brought in source number 18 also the Kitul Shulchan Aruch. And he says as follows. Source number 18. However, remember that the source that said we're not allowed from the Torah to cause distress. He says, however, if they are causing harm to a person, if the animals are causing harm to a person, or if a person needs them for healing or any other purpose, it is permissible to kill them, to kill the animals, and we are not concerned about causing them distress, as the Torah itself permits slaughtering animals for food. The basis of all is the idea that Torah did not prohibit anywhere slaughtering animals for food. Now it's important to say, originally it did. Originally there was a prohibition given to all mankind from consuming meat. We were not allowed to consume meat. It only became permitted when... After the flood. And along the road, I have a shiur that I want to give about vegetarianism. Should we all be vegans or vegetarians? Interesting to see. Originally, we were forbidden from eating animals. But what happened is that after the flood, when we saw that mankind did not reach the moral standard that God wanted us to reach, he said, okay, so I'm lowering down the bar. I'm lowering down the standard. And now... Originally, we were not allowed to eat animals. Now, we are allowed to eat animals, but it is what we call b'diavad and not lechatchila. It is only because we sinned and God saw that we were not such good creatures and not because it is something we should do all the time. But today, for millions of years, people eat animals, and that's why it is not forbidden from the Torah. Therefore, we know that if we can actually slaughter for eating, we can also slaughter or cause harm for healing, or if there's animals that causes harm for another person, the person is coming, he has more priority than the animal itself. Another example is that even though we are permitting slaughter, the Jewish kosher shechita is actually one that is considered to be one of the most, we should say, compassionate and full of mercy, and should actually make less distress to the animal itself in the way we do it. I don't want to get into this now, but it's interesting that also the rabbis, I brought Sefer HaChinuch, for example, in verse number 19, he says that the idea that we slaughter, the kosher slaughter that needs to be done with a knife, and from the neck, he says that we can also, source number 19, I'll read it inside actually, source number 19, he says, we can also say, as a reason for slaughter from the neck and with a checked knife, that it is in order that we do not cause too much pain for living beings, said the Sefer HaChinuch. And then we know that this is one of the best ways to cause a slaughter. Alright? So one of the ways is to try and cause as much, even if it is permitted, we should try to avoid as much pain from the animals as much as possible. That's why there are some rabbis that say that if we need to be vegetarian today, it's not because we're not allowed to kill animals. We are allowed to. But it's because the entire system, the entire industry, because of shipments of animals being danced in trucks and being shipped from one place to another in a lot of distress because the way that cows or cattle are treated in those slaughterhouse, in the wherever they're grown and so on, this is for itself alone a reason for people not to consume meat. Not talking about killing the animals. Killing the animals is the easiest part of it that we're actually allowed, but the entire setting, the entire conditions if this industry is really, really bad, and only because of that we're not allowed to eat meat. Some say that as well, by the way, because we're not allowed to cause a distress. Yes, Claudette?
I have a question. Portion meat, right? Today we know that they give cows all kind of injections to make them fatter and all that. Can the kosher meat come from a cow like that?
Depends what you give the cow. Depends what you give the cow. That's why you need to have heksher, right?
So the cows that are given all kinds of, I forgot what is the word I'm looking for.
The same thing is for milk, not only for meat. Can you drink the milk of such a cow? There's a lot of halachot regarding kashrut. I actually learned with my friend Nathan here. At the beginning of this year, we learned some kashrut of milk and so on. There's a lot of things regarding this, all right? There is a milk. A lot of things regarding, for example, milks that was the cow belongs to a non-Jew and that's a non-Jew dairy farm, for example. There's some people that don't drink what we call something that is not Chalav Israel. It's called Chalav Stam. Chalav Israel is a milk that is produced out of a cow that was actually watched and supervised by a Jew from the moment it was milked. So there's a lot of rulings in Halachot regarding this, of the Halachot of Kashrut. I don't want to get into this now, but there's a lot to be said about this, all right? A lot to be said about this. If you want to see another example of how sensitive the rabbis are for treating animals, take a look in this halacha, which is not pasken. We don't say this is a ruling, but it, just as it is written, it says a lot about the rabbis. I brought in source number 20. I bet many of you have never heard of this ruling. I brought in source number 20. The Rama, Rav Moshe Isherli, says, it is customary to congratulate somebody who wears new clothes with the blessing, you should wear them out and renew them. First of all, that's a halacha. If you see your friend wearing a new shirt, go and tell them, Tevale v'techadesh. You should wear them out and renew them. That's a halacha. That's a ruling. He then adds, citing Rabbeinu Yerucham, some say that this expression should not be used for shoes or other items made of animal hides. He says, and we're talking about 16th, 17th century, all right? Why? He says, because this implies that another animal will need to be killed so that another garment can be made. You see, we're not talking about a vegan rabbi in 2023. We're talking about Rabbi Moshe Isherlish from Krakow, from Poland, that he says that maybe we should not say, oh, te'elevetechadesh on shoes that are made out of leather. Or on any kind of couch that someone buys, or a sofa that is made out of leather, or if someone wears a shirt or a sweater made out of wool. Maybe we shouldn't say that, right? And he says, and the verse states his mercies upon all creatures. We saw this verse from Tehillim. Although this is a very weak reason, he finishes up and says, which does not seem right, nonetheless, many are particular not to say it. He says, look, I'm not so sure we should not, but many people don't say it. Many people don't congratulate a person that buys a new cloth, a new garment that is made out of animal things. I was only introduced to this when I prepared this year. I've never heard of this halacha before. But again, it's a mainstream Ramah that is passing for the Ashkenazi. Again, he says, I don't hold like this. I don't think you should not congratulate. But some do. Rabbeinu Yerucham says, you should not congratulate someone who buys a garment that is made out of wool or made out of leather. That was caused, any kind of distress was caused to an animal by making this this thing. Which is very interesting. Think about that today. When you can go and buy shoes from leather or shoes from fake leather, maybe it is better to buy shoes from fake leather and not from leather. Maybe there is actually a very interesting halacha, or at least a Jewish value behind doing such a thing. But after we saw all of this, we saw that Tzar Bali Chaim is important. Oh, yes, Nathan, then we'll summarize. And then we'll get to the conclusion. Yes.
Does this apply also to saying Shekhianu?
Very good question. He doesn't talk about Shekhianu. What Nathan is asking is that we have a mitzvah that when a person buys a new garment or buys a new furniture or buys something that makes him happy, a new thing, he blesses Shehecheyanu, right? Besides the bracha of Shehecheyanu on this new thing. Very interesting. He doesn't talk about Shehecheyanu, but I will tell you two things, what I'm just thinking out now, all right? First of all, my personal, Dan Rakovsky's opinion is that I personally don't say Shehecheyanu on clothing, unless it is a very special cloth, because clothes today, in 2023, is not what it was even 100 years ago. All right, today, Baruch Hashem, not my closet, but go open, you can see Priel's closet. You'll see how many dresses I buy her as a gift. Believe me, it's not so special anymore. I mean, for me, it's special to give gift every time. But today, people don't look at clothes as special anymore. And the Shehecheyanu should be recited when you actually have a special thing, right? That's why, for example, people say, on Rosh Hashanah, if you want to say Shehecheyanu on the second day, then make sure you have like a new shirt on you on Rosh Hashanah so you can say Shehecheyanu on it or something like that. I personally don't hold it. I don't say Shehecheyanu on clothing because it doesn't make me so happy. I did say Shehecheyanu though, interesting, on the uniform I received in the first day in the army. That is one of the only places that said Shehecheyanu because I thought it has a lot of meaning behind it, more than just regular clothing. I wore the uniform for the first time, and I received it when I drafted to the army in 2017. I felt like it is something that is very important to say and to do. So that was in the army. But I don't say that. So if we go back to do you need to say it or not, I should say it doesn't matter where the clothing came from. It matters do you feel happy with it or not. So I think maybe Shehecheyanu you would say, actually, if it comes from an animal. But again, very interesting question. I'm not sure. I don't know. Very interesting question to think about that. By the way, if I already mentioned the army, you know the vegan soldiers have today an option to choose fake leather shoes and to choose a beret that is not made out of wool and so on. And they have the army, the IDF provides uniform for those who want that is not made out of animal product, which is very interesting to think about that. I don't know how the Canadian forces or the USA forces do that, but in the IDF, you can actually ask for such uniforms if you don't want to wear it.
Can I say something here?
Very fast, very quickly. Ruhama, good to see you. Thank you for joining. But we didn't yet have the conclusion, so very fast. Yeah.
Okay, I don't know because I joined late. I told you I would not be here. It's very interesting that it depends on us that God will give food to the animals. It's written in Beshacharit, Im tishme'u el mitvotai, venatati esev besadchani.
Yes, we talked about it. We talked about this. Yes.
Oh, you did talk about
yes,
it.
Yes, at the beginning of the class. We actually mentioned this passage. God will first give the food for the animals if we are righteous, and only then he will also feed us. That's why we need to give food for our pets before we actually feed ourselves. That's one of the things. Beautiful. That's a beautiful, beautiful idea. So we, to summarize what we did so far, we said, we learned, we established how important it is not to cause distress to any human, to any animal, to any creature. We saw the examples. But we also saw that it is actually fine to do so if you need, if there is a reasonable cause. For example, healing or for food, for like slaughter and so on. So what about hunting? Does hunting, hobby of hunting, is considered to be something that is forbidden because of Tsar Bali Chaim? So we don't have a lot of sources about hunting among the rabbis. Because in general, I should say, hunting was not such a Jewish thing. In general, Jews are not known to be hunters. It's not really a Jewish thing so much. It's a very European, maybe, or kind of. But Jews usually were not hunters, because Esav was a hunter. We're more Yaakov. We're Bnei Yaakov. We're not Bnei Esav. Nevertheless, there is one very substantive source brought by the Noda BeYehuda. Noda BeYehuda was a very special, very, very chashuv rabbi. Noda BeYehuda was Rabbi Yecheskel Landa. He was in the 18th century. He was the rabbi of Prague back then in the 18th century. He wrote down different books. One of the most famous books he wrote is a response, a Q&A called Noda BeYehuda, where he answers different halachic questions. And one of the questions he was asked is, can a person go hunt? And he says that, take a look at Brandon's verse number 21. He says that killing animals is not considered causing suffering. That's how he's paskin. We saw that. The prohibition involves causing suffering to an animal while it is alive, which does not apply to hunting. Says the Noda BeYehuda, if hunting would be forbidden, surprise to all, it is not because Tsar Bali Chaim. It would be because of other reasons. So everything was established so far is true and correct. But says the Noda BeYehuda, it's not enough to prohibit hunting. It's not enough. Because why? Because Tsar Bali Chaim is when it is Bal Chaim. Bal Chaim means when it's a living creature. But when you hunt it and you kill it, it's not Tsar Bali Chaim. Maybe it's a different problem, but it's not Tsar Bali Chaim. So says the Noda BeYehuda, it is not forbidden because of this. Yet it is forbidden. And for the conclusion, as I said at the beginning of the class, hunting is forbidden by halacha. Forbidden. Jews are not allowed to go hunt from halacha. But if it's not from Tsar Bali Chaim, then from what it is? What's the reason that it will be forbidden? And this brings us... Sorry?
It's a cruel sport.
So I don't want to use the cruelty part. I want to use the sports part, actually, what you said. And there is something called, which I want to introduce the term, called Moshav Leitzim. Something called Moshav Leitzim. What is Moshav Leitzim? Moshav Leitzim really means bad culture. And we have a value in our halachic world that a Jew should not engage in any bad culture. All right? Even if we're not talking about Tsar Bali Chaim. And take a look. I brought examples. The first verse of Tehillim, if you ever read Tehillim, the first verse of the first chapter of Tehillim, I brought it in verse number 22. Happy is the man who has not followed the counsel of the wicked, or taken the path of sinners, or joined the company of the insolent. And now, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah explains, what is the path of the wicked? The counsel of the wicked. What is the path of sinners? What did that mean? And the Gemara says in verse number 23, Rabbi Shimon ben Padi taught, happy is the man that has not walked in the counsel of the wicked, is referring to the theaters and circuses of Gentiles, nor stood in the way of sinners. This is referring to one who has not stood in a kinigyon. Using the word kinigyon. What is the word kinigyon? Rashi explained in verse number 24. What is kinigyon? Kinigyon is the hunting of animals by means of dogs, all for the sake of merriness and frivolity, says Rashi. The Gemara tells us, Rashi explains, that the first verse of Tehillim tells us a person should not go in the path of the sinners. And this is what? Talking about hunting. For what? Not going to hunt for merriness and frivolity. Well, this is the motivation of a person that goes to hunt. It is not something we advocate at all. It is something we actually prohibit, because it is not for a need. A Jew should not engage in such a matter. Even not talking about it is cruelty. A person should not engage in such a matter. And Abraham source number 25, that's what the Rama says when he talks about actually dogs. When you want to go and say, take a look at source number 25, the Rama says, a person who sends out the dog to hunt a game animal on Shabbat, this is considered trapping, something that he should not do. But he said there are those who say that even during the week, any day, it is forbidden to do this with a dog, for this is the conduct of Moshe of Leitzim, a company of scoffers. A person should not go hunting with dogs, with guns, with knives, with whatever, not only on Shabbat, but any kind, in any day of the week. Because we are commanded not to be part of Moshe of Leitzim, not to be part of a company of scoffers, not to be part of a bad culture. Because Jews, it's just not what we do. It's just not what we do. We don't need to go all the way to Tzar Bali Chaim to prove it. We don't need to go to explain because we can cause distress. But it is just because it is not an activity we take part of. And I brought it also in source number 26. The Givat Shaul explains. Take a look in source number 26. He says, and he summarizes beautifully, hunting, which involves letting dogs loose mercilessly on animals, trapping them and killing them, is forbidden according to our Torah. For it generates a cruel nature, as Claudette said. So great is the prohibition that the Torah instructs us to cover the blood of animals and fowl after their slaughter. We didn't even talk about it. Another example, you need to cover blood of animal you slaughter. As though innocent blood was spilled that must be covered. Folks, hunting is forbidden. And hunting is forbidden not because Tzar Balei Chaim. Tzar Balei Chaim we established. It's a very important value in our Jewish life. Well, we don't do it because we're Jews. That's the only reason we don't do it. And beautifully, and we'll finish with that, the Noda Be'Yehuda finishes and wraps up his answer when he explains why it is forbidden. And take a look in source number 27, the last paragraph of source 27. Noda Be'Yehuda says, but someone whose main intention is not to sustain himself, and it is out of his heart's desire that he goes to a place where wild animals gather, and he places himself in a danger, such a person transgresses the commandment of you shall carefully guard your lives. We don't do it. We put ourselves in danger. Jews should not go out and hunt and should stay at home. And I go back to what I opened with, that apply to fishing as well? It's a good question. It's a very, very good question. Does that apply to fishing as well? Many, many rabbis, most of them say no. Most of the rabbis said fishing is not considered a bad culture. It is not considered to be a bad thing that you do. It's not like hunting. Obviously, there's no danger, as there is in hunting itself. Therefore, it's not going to be forbidden. But I'll add, if I may, not as opposed to kalacha, but from my humble opinion, if a person can choose if he wants to go fish or want to go learn Torah, better to spend an hour in a shir about hunting than spending an hour on a boat going fishing in a lake. Why? Because we're Jews. That is all for today. Thank you very, very much. Thank I hope you. It was interesting. I hope the birds enjoyed it, Barbara. It was a very animal, pro-animal. Thank you very much. If there's any questions or comments in here, God willing, next week, next Monday, we will continue. We will talk about cultured meat in halacha. Lab-grown meat. Is it fleishik? Can we eat it with milk? Can you eat lab-grown milk? Can you eat lab-grown pigs or something? We'll talk all about this very complicated issue. A lot of technology. All of this will be, God willing, next week.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, questions.
Rabbi. Very, very,
very interesting.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very, very much. Be well.